We talk a lot on this podcast about chess improvement, but when it comes to improving your hiring processes, Indeed is the platform you need. Indeed has over 350 million global monthly visitors, and it has a matching engine that helps you find quality work candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with your candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Years ago, when I was running a chess teaching business, I found it hard to find good help, and I had to go through a lot of back and forth to even screen potential candidates. Indeed allows you to do those things efficiently in one place. Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed for hiring, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of Perpetual Chess will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility if you go to Indeed.com/chess. Just go to Indeed.com/chess right now, and you'll be supporting our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast, Indeed.com/chess. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hello there, Perpetual Chess listeners. We've got another bonus pod for you. Although if you're doing what you should be doing and you're already subscribed to the How to Chess podcast, then this one isn't really a bonus because you might have already heard it. What we're going to do is share a recent episode of How to Chess with you here on the Perpetual Chess feed, just to give you a taste of what the show is like. I think a lot of you may already be subscribed to How to Chess, but just in case some of you aren't, you can search for it separately in your podcast apps. We'll also put links for Spotify and Apple Podcasts for you to check it out. But the theme of the show, of course, is it's similar to Perpetual Chess in that it's chess-based conversation, but it's focused a bit more exclusively on chess improvement, and it is shorter. Often it's sort of targeted instruction on one topic. Like the episode I'm going to play for you guys in a minute is the most recent one with Grandmaster Sahej Grover, who of course is the co-author of the Timeless Techniques Endgame course on Chessable, which is a fantastic course. Regular listeners will know I love the book Endgame Strategy by Shereshevsky, and it's like an updated version of that, and probably a little better presented in terms of the range of the audience that can access it. So to get to hear Grandmaster Sahej Grover talk about how he learned endgames as a top youth player and how he now learns them as a trainer was a lot of fun. He actually was just at the Olympiad as the trainer of the South Africans where he lives. And if you go through the archive of How to Chess, you'll find some amazing episodes with some fantastic guests, Vladimir Kramnik, Peter Svidler, FM Peter Giannatos was super popular here on Perpetual Chess. He's got a separate interview on the How to Chess feed. So it's well worth making sure you're subscribed and listening when interested. We've got a few episodes left coming in season two of How to Chess. And again, if you're not already subscribed, then I think you'll enjoy a lot of the already recorded episodes. So without further ado, let's bring you over to the interview with Sahej Grover. And again, if you like what you hear or you like any of the other episodes you hear, be sure that you are subscribed to How to Chess, which is brought to you ad-free by Chessable.com. Here we go. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to How to Chess. Of course, this is a weekly chess improvement show where we try to give you some actionable advice in a quicker format to take to your weekend tournament or whatever you may be doing. And this week, we are joined by a South African-based, Indian-born grandmaster, trainer, and Chessable author. He is best known on Chessable for his course called Timeless Technique Strategic Endgames, in which he collaborated with FM Daniel Barish. He's got tons of achievements over the board. He won the Under 10 World Youth Chess Championship in 2005, came in third in the Under 20 World Junior Chess Championship in 2011. He won the South African Open in 2017 and 2018. And being that his course is on endgames, that's what we're going to discuss today. Try to find out sort of how to blend the practical and the technical. But before we dig into it, let's welcome him to the show. Grandmaster Sahej Grover, how are you?
I'm feeling great, Ben. Thank you for this great introduction. I'm very, very happy to be here.
Excellent. Yeah, and I'm excited to dig into this topic because I think a lot of people, when they run programs like Aim Chess or just like in terms of like interacting with a coach or getting some feedback, they feel like they need to work on endgames. And often they go straight to the technical manuals. I mean, at the beginning level, there's the famous Jeremy Soman's Endgame course, which is a great resource. Kind of at the intermediate level, although it runs the gamut, is of course Chessable's famous course, 100 Endgames You Must Know. And once you start to approach a level like yours, there's Dvoretsky's Endgame Manual. And all of these books have their place, but there's more to endgames than just knowing cold positions like the Lucina position or the King and Pawn endgames or Queen against Rook as you get more advanced, or whatever it may be. So my first question for you, Sahej, is how do you balance studying technical endgames as opposed to just sort of observing how a strong player converts an advantage?
That's a good question. I would first start by knowing my basics, which is basically the fundamentals of chess. As you mentioned, you know, Lucina, Philidor, frontal attack, you know, King Pawn endgames, and so on. But as you progress and as you get better through those endgames, it's not just important to know them theoretically, it's also important to play them accurately. So like an example of this is I have found many times that, you know, the famous rook bishop versus rook position, it is winning, but I know many players are not able to actually convert it over the board. So it is extremely important that you try to you know, play it practically and gain that experience so that when it happens over the board, you know, you are just better prepared. With that being said, you know, once we have, you know, established our fundamentals and, you know, once you've gained some practical experience, I think it's important to, you know, dig a little deeper and get into the side of practical endgames where theory is not just everything. You know, you are trying to not enter a theoretical situation, so to speak, because let's say if you're a pawn up or in a rook endgame, most of the times that endgame is going to be a draw. So your idea is to not enter a theoretically drawn position and try to confuse your opponent as much as possible, because you're aware that there is a theoretical endgame that is a draw that can arise in a situation like this. Similarly, you know, if you're on the defensive side, then you would try to enter that theoretical endgame, you know, because then it makes your job a lot easier to, you know, to hold off that position. So yeah, this is why I always say that it's much better to establish your fundamentals and only then, you know, dig into the practical side of endgames, pretty much.
Gotcha. So basically, you lay the foundation, get the building blocks, and then from there you proceed to actually studying how endgames are played from sort of start of the endgame to finish of the endgame. Now, my question for you, Sage, and this might be tough to answer in what's predominantly an audio-only format, but like, how do we know when we're ready to make that transition? Is there like a certain rating level, or are there just like a certain list of endgames, or how do we know when we're ready to start studying complete endgames and not just learning the basic technical endgame?
So Well, as someone who works at Chessable, I will definitely recommend the 100 Endgames final test to you.
Okay.
100%. And apart from that, I think it's very important to gain practical experience, because knowing the position theoretically is not just enough. You know, if you know a Lucina position, you don't have to set it up the exact same way, because Lucina works, doesn't matter what on what file, okay, except for the rook pawn, doesn't matter on what file the pawn is, it will work the same way. So it's much more important to perfect your technique rather than to memorize what the position says. So once you're able to do that on, you know, not just Lucina or Philidor, but slightly more complex positions or complex techniques like, the frontal attack or, the long side, short side principle, something like that. Once you're able to perfect those or, I don't want to say 100% accurate, but if you're accurate most of the time, then that is a time where you would sort of try to go into endgames in general. I personally, was a huge fan of king pawn endgames to begin with, and I'm very proud to say that I have studied the entire section of the king pawn endgames from Dvoretsky's book. It took me a lot of time, but I'm very proud to say that I have actually finished that before. And this is it's not just enough for me to know those positions theoretically, because I am definitely going to forget them. So it's much, much more important to rather play them out. So you remember some patterns, from your past experiences. And I think that is more crucial in this case.
Okay. Well, it's good to hear that you've done the work. And I was actually wondering about that, because as someone who was one of the top youth players in your country, you often sort of hear stories about if you're playing one of these top kids, steer them into the end game. And I know I saw you mentioned in an interview you did on the Chessable blog that you were sort of a dynamic tactical player. So it's good that you did that work, Sahej, but I'm curious when you started sprinkling in the end game work in your own experience.
From very early on, actually. This is sort of a habit I also try to, implement with my students, because I believe it's very important to establish your fundamentals before you move on to opening theory or middle game. In general. I think it's way more important to study the theoretical side of things. And I started basically when I was 4 years or 5 years old from an endgame book. I believe the
Wow.
one I started off was Chess Fundamentals by Capablanca. I don't take my word for it, but as far as my memory goes, that is the first endgame book that I remember studying. I didn't study it at the time. I was someone read it to me, and then of course I had to lay it out and so on.
Okay. And you mentioned Capablanca. Do you have a favorite endgame player?
Oh, that's a good question. Actually, it's difficult. When I was younger, I had Rubinstein, Capablanca, of course. But nowadays, if you don't say Magnus, I don't think it's fair, because he's clearly the best endgame player in the world. And I think in history as well. That is just my opinion. But yeah, at his level, I think nobody else does it better than him.
Excellent. Yeah, and I saw in Timeless Technique, you've got some Magnus endgames in there.
Oh, yes. that experience is personally, very, very painful for me.
Well, we should say what the experience is. I'm laughing because we were discussing before we started recording. But Sahej, why don't you set the stage for listeners and viewers?
Well, so we're playing in the Pro Chess League, and Magnus starts off with one knight a3, which already is quite typical of Magnus. But at that point, I'm thinking, okay, I cannot lose this. And then we end up into this middle game position, and we just exchange the queens. And I find this very nice idea of bishop e2 and bishop takes f3. I'm super happy with my position. And then Magnus does something really strange, which is to bring his rook from d1 to d7, which I did not expect him to do at all. And then I respond that by playing knight to e5, hitting his rook. And to my surprise, Magnus does not defend the rook. He just leaves the rook as it is. He defends it by his rook, but I can still take his exchange, and I can be completely winning after that, as I'm exchange up for nothing. But I don't know what happened to me at that stage, but I'm trying to convince myself that it was a black spot, that it won't happen again. But I really don't know what happened. But I just didn't see it. And even though my previous move was to take the rook, I just simply didn't see that that rook was hanging on the next move. I guess this is what you would call a Magnus effect, you know, right. where you don't really expect someone like Magnus to make a mistake like that. So yeah, I believe that's what happened. And at least, you know, after that, he gave me a very nice lesson on endgames after that, as mentioned in my course. So, you know, something good came of it, at least.
That's funny. Yeah. You always hear that about, I feel like, the world champions in particular, where they have this aura and you just sort of feel the power and make mistakes that you wouldn't otherwise make. It's amazing that it works still over the computer. Even when you're just playing playing online, you still feel the effect. I guess I'm gathering you were a little more nervous than usual for that one, Sahesh.
100%. It's not every day you play Magnus. So it was, of course, it was an honor itself to play against Magnus. But yeah, it's playing against him and playing against anybody else is, you know, there's a huge difference. And I wish, you know, I tell my students as well that, you know, this is, you should always look at the board, not at the player. But, and, you know, it feels a little wrong because I myself was not able to achieve this, this thing on that day. So, you know, I was quite disappointed with myself that it actually happened. But, you know, at the end of the day, he is a world champion. He is, you know, he does have that aura, you know, and deservedly so. So
yeah. And I'm guessing that's not the only Magnus endgame in Timeless Technique.
I believe there are, that's the only one, if I can remember. But I am planning on an update sometime in the next month, or maybe in December. Where I will add a couple of endgames by, you know, high-class players, and including Magnus himself, because I've been working on some updates in the past, you know, along with my co-author, Daniel Barish. And we have decided to, you know, try and, you know, revamp the course a little bit and, you know, add a few more positions. So definitely there will be more content by Magnus as well.
Excellent. And it sounds great. And I know that you say a good sort of precursor is to make sure that you pass the final test of 100 endgames you must know. But if someone's maybe thinking about just diving right into the course of you and Daniel, could you give any sort of rating guideline of for whom you think Timeless Technique might be most appropriate, Sahesh?
Well, I think that our course was a little easier than we anticipated, because this concept is not easy to understand. But I think the way it was written, and from the feedback that we have gotten, it has come to our attention that, you know, that it is actually a lot easier to understand, you know, the way it's written, and, you know, the way the positions are presented. So I would recommend this course before you study 100 endgames in that sense.
Oh, okay.
Because it does have some theoretical elements, although it is not about theory at all, but it has some theoretical elements to it. I would, in terms of ratings, you know, there is a one of the users left a very nice review on our course, where they actually showed which courses you need to study and in order. And was fantastic. I would recommend everybody to, you know, go check out that review and just, you know, follow that order, which is just which is exactly how one should study the endgames.
Okay, and we're a bit over time, Sahesh, but last thing before we sum up and then maybe talk a little about what you're working on currently. But I also saw, just to give viewers and listeners a little more context, you mentioned in the aforementioned interview that you feel like people should spend an equal amount of time on different aspects of the game in terms of how much to study endgames?
Oh, 100%. Because, you know, I actually that comment is more, you know, geared towards people who spend hours on openings and not any time on anything else. Because I believe I've faced this myself. You know, some of my students have had this issue as well, where they one move out of theory and they don't know what is happening on the board. So it is extremely crucial that you spend equal amounts of time on, you know, opening, middle game, and end game. So if you have 3 hours, spend 1 hour each. If you have an hour and a half, you know, 30 minutes each, and, you know, so on. Just so that there is some consistency in your play. And yeah, because I don't think that, you know, end games are more important than openings, but more often than not, at least in today's day and age, with you know, computers and engines taking over, it's sort of hard to not look at the engine and, you know, just sort of make your own conclusions, you know, what about what which opening to play or what to do. And I believe it's equally important that we, you know, give attention to middle games and we give attention to end games as well.
Okay. Excellent. Well, a good note to wrap up on. So Sahej, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to summarize what we've learned so far, and then let's hear about what else you're up to. Does that sound good?
Great. Great.
Okay. And we are back with my three takeaways from Sahej, because of course, end games are something that I always, it's one of those things I always want to work on more. And I, like Sahej was alluding to, in my case, I maybe spend too much time on tactics, but also on openings. And it's important. I mean, often just playing an endgame correctly can just immediately swing the result of a game half a point in any direction, or sometimes in tragic circumstances, a full point in any direction. So here are three things that I've taken away from my conversation with Grandmaster Sahej Grover. Number one is, of course, know your fundamentals. I was impressed because, again, I had my sort of preconceived notion that as a former youth champion, that Sahej would be someone who was just sort of naturally crushing people tactically and not doing the work for end games. But as he revealed, I mean, he's been studying Capablanca basically since he was in diapers. So it's important to lay the foundation before you move on to the practical side, which brings me to number two, which is to study the practical side of endgames. And of course, Timeless Techniques is a great way to do that. I often recommend Endgame Strategy by Shereshevsky. You could study the greats, as Sahej mentioned, Capablanca, Rubinstein, and the list goes on. This guy, Magnus Carlsen, apparently knows what he's doing as well. And point number three is just do the work. I was really impressed with what Sahej said about putting in the work on the king and pawn endgames in Dvoretsky's endgame manual, which of course is very advanced. I mean, it's sort of a master level tome, which you hear a lot of strong players like Sahej saying, like, you know, it just collects dust on my bookshelf. Like, I got it because I was told to get it and because every master level player is supposed to have it, but I haven't looked at it, you'll hear them say. So it was really impressive that part of the reason he's able to been able to attain the success he has is because he put in the work on that aspect of his game as well as the others. So thank you, Sahej, for all these insights. And before we were recording, you were mentioning that you're working on another Chessable course. So dare we say what you have in the pipeline?
Well, I'm working on two Chessable courses at the moment. One of them, I'm acting as a presenter. This course is on the Chigorin repertoire for Black. Basically, after D4, I have answered probably about 100 comments on the forums where they ask, is it against E4 or D4? So I feel, you know, that I have to mention what it's against. And it is a pretty dynamic repertoire. And I'm quite excited about it, actually, because it's new, it's fresh, and it's working.
So that's D4, D5, C4, Knight C6?
That is correct. Okay. But it also covers, you know, London, Trompowski, and some of the others, like Colley's system and other sidelines as well that White can play. So it's a full repertoire for Black, for players who want to play Knight C6. You know, and I see that, you know, there is quite a bit of craze for that specific move because it hasn't been covered on Chessable before. So I'm quite excited to see how it does. Then there's another course that I'm working on, and this will be, I should have mentioned probably before, that the course on Chigorin is not just mine. It's also with my long time, one of my best friends. His name is Grandmaster Abhijit Gupta. He's also a world junior champion. You know, people call him Mr. Commonwealth because he has won Commonwealth, I believe, 5 times already. So yeah, he's the one who's doing the works for that course. So, you know, And I've seen the work, and it is quite high quality, I must say. And the second course, I'm acting as a solo author, and this is going to be on the Four Knights Spanish version. So when you play e4, e5, knight f3, knight c6, knight c3, knight f6, and then bishop b5, when you don't go for the Scotch, but rather the Spanish instead. Once again, this is going to be a full repertoire, so it doesn't just contain the Four Knights. It also contains Petrov, Philidor, you know, some of the other second move sidelines that Black has. So it will be a full repertoire that White has, and I've already worked on some of the files for the Four Knights course already, but it is probably going to be published next year, I would assume in February, March time. No specific date has been set yet, but yeah, the The Chigorin course, on the other hand, we are trying to finish most likely by November or December. We will see how it goes. But yeah, with recordings, you know, it depends on, you know, how fast I'm able to record. It is a lot to do, ultimately.
Wow. Yeah, it sounds like you're pretty busy. So dare I ask, Sahej, if you're going to be able to compete at all, or is it too much with working on multiple courses at one time right now?
Not anytime soon, I will say, because I have a lot on my plate. And, you know, on top of that, I have a 9-to-5 at Chessable as well as the publishing manager. So definitely, you know, I will not play any tournaments in at least for this year. Then, which is weird because I think this is my first year that I have not played a single classical game, which is kind of sad if I think about it. Right. But I will definitely make up for it next year. I want to go out and I want to play. And it's been quite some time. And, you know, with of course, COVID is still very real. But with the restrictions being lifted, you know, tournaments happening again, I would definitely want to, you know, participate more just in general.
Yeah, I mean, during these COVID times, it's as valid a time as ever to take a break and focus on your professional work. So, Sahej, lots of great insights, and look forward to the Chigorin course, which I'm thinking about naming it the Reverse Jabava. What do you think of that as a name? I think it might sell a few
That is clever. That's clever. I'll actually make a petition for this.
Okay. So,
that's clever.
So we'll look forward to the Reverse Jabava and the Spanish Four Nights as well. So thanks again, Sahej. This has been a lot of fun.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. It's an honor to be on this show, and you're doing a great job of it.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Podcast Network.